Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got smooth
drama.
All right, welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-Word, and I'm joined by my illustrious co-host, Miss 100%, and tonight, got a special treat for you. We have a guest, Miss D. Severe, co-owner of Severe Society Films. So if you want to holla at us, the number is 646-929-2037. Once again, the call-in number is 646-929-2037. And of course, we want y'all to hook up with us, so we encourage you to go to our Smooth Drama site at smoothdrama.com. Also, on Twitter, I'm Smooth Drama. Follow me. I'll follow you back. Facebook, my yearbook tag, Dick Hugger, add me. I'll add you back. We can talk a taste on whatever because, you know, I'm that type of guy. Like LL Cool J was at one time. Anyway, I know y'all ain't really trying to holler at me. You really want to hear from my fabulous, illustrious co-host. So fabulous, illustrious co-host. Tell them where they can holler at you at.
Yes. They, as always, they can catch up with me on Facebook. Miss 100%. Spell it out. You'll miss 100%. Spelled out on Facebook. Or Miss 100% at yahoo.com. Like Dick said, add me, I'll add you back. You want to talk, we can talk as long as you ain't on that BS.
Oh, well, speaking of being on that BS, I guess you won't be as mad as a man in Michigan who, I guess he came home and didn't like the dinner. He was upset that dinner wasn't up to par, so he shot at her.
That's not funny.
I'm like, I mean, it says that he was intoxicated, but I'm like, dinner has to be really bad where he's like, you know what? Where my gun at?
I done got sick of this. I work all day, come home, all I want is a hot meal.
I gotta get drunk just to come home to eat. And even drunk is terrible. Where am I going at?
Right, because you know, with a person drunk, they eat just about anything.
Right.
They drunk. So that had to be really bad for him not to eat it.
Exactly. I'm sitting up here thinking like, wow, he pulled the gat out.
It seems like it's a lot of this stuff going around. It was a lady who actually who pulled the gun out on her husband because she was tired of cooking for him. She got mad because he was criticizing everything that she cooked. So she decided, look, I'm tired of it. You either eat it or I'm never cooking for you again. But I don't understand why the guns have to be.
Right. I'm like, don't pull off me. I'm like, yo, I will make something else.
Wow.
Yeah, and speaking of pulling the gun, I was reading that in Turkey, all Turkish men, it's mandatory that they do military service. The only way that you can escape it is if you're ill, disabled, or homosexual. But in order to prove your homosexuality, they ask you very, very intense questions like when you first had anal intercourse, oral sex, what kind of toys you played with as a child, whether you wore women's clothes or used women's perfume.
What?
Yeah, and I guess in Turkey, if you're going to say you gay and you don't want to, and I don't understand why gay people can't fight in the military.
That's what I was going to say myself. I don't Does that take away from the fact that you're a man?
Yeah, I'm sitting up there thinking, well, man or not, you can pull the trigger.
Right.
Yeah, last time I checked, Greece, they conquered the world, and they were a gay society.
That was very gay society.
Yeah, they were as gay as they got, and they ruled the world. And Rome was as trisexual as you got. They was gay,
right.
Bi, whatever.
Right.
They conquered the world, too.
Well, Turkish military, isn't that one of those parts of one of those countries where it's illegal to be homosexual?
Yeah, they're if I'm not mistaken, they're a predominantly Muslim country.
So I'm thinking, okay, you say that you're gay to get out of fighting, but then in some parts over there, you get the death penalty for being gay. So,
well, I mean, you get over there, you get a pink certificate which declares you as homosexual and therefore exempt.
Wow.
Yeah, that's extra.
Until they come to kill you for being gay.
Pretty much. You,
yeah. Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah, you're putting your life on the line.
Either way, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Or unless you hook up with the right politician, because, you know, of course, there's always them underground politicians stomping on bathroom floors. Anyway, speaking of politicians, you know how we've been talking about the Facebook passwords being asked for by potential employers. Reading that in Maryland, they're contemplating a bill to prohibit employers from asking for your Facebook password.
They're contemplating.
Yeah, contemplating. I'm like, yo, it's a violation of your rights. I shouldn't have to give up the password to shit.
Right. But it seems like one of those things where they're like, okay, we're going to do this because, not because it's right, but because we want to get some voters on our side. We want to, you know, play like we want to do the right thing, but we're only contemplating it to see if, you know, like they want to jump ship at the end and say, oh, well, not enough people support us, so no, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, I'm like,
that's what it seemed like to me.
Well,
you know?
Well, that and the fact that they probably going to ask some of these corporations for a donation.
Mm-hmm.
You know how that goes. Yeah, yeah, we're going to pass this bill because we heard you guys. Oh. Well, we were coming down to your office to write a check for your re-election campaign.
Wow.
I'm just saying that. Kind of how that conversation goes.
It seems like they're waiting to see, you know, what type of money they'll get before they decide if they want to make this into a law or not.
Yeah, that just showed how the shakedown goes.
Yeah.
You give them a call. Hey, we hear that you guys are asking for Facebook passwords. Oh, no, that was one of our lower level managers. And they've been reprimanded, and we already sent him down to your office to cut you that check.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's how I think it goes. You know, you I mean, being the fact that corporations are people and all that.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And I don't want people to get it twisted and think that, oh, all of a sudden the politicians in Maryland care or give a damn about you, because it's not about you. It's about their pockets. Please believe me. It has nothing to do with their rights.
What are you talking about? Politicians love the people who vote them in.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, like alligators love politicians. Especially down in Florida. Bill Posey, Representative Bill Posey, guess he was going to church and he had a 6-foot alligator that was waiting on him underneath his car.
Wow. 6, what'd you say?
6 foot. Not the
man. Like an alligator as tall as a grown man was up under his car.
Right. Yeah, I mean.
Long as a grown man. Wow.
Yeah, you think about how symbolic that is. Down in Florida, you know that place where they got their stand your ground law?
Mm-hmm.
There's a gator waiting on a politician, probably one of the politicians who voted for that stupid law in the first place. It's like, yeah, I'm going to stand my ground right underneath your car. Come get in your car, please.
And it could have been anybody, but it just so happened to be a politician.
Yes, a Florida politician.
A Florida politician.
I mean, I don't know what else you can say about that.
I mean, even nature know that these people are not, up and up. I mean.
Right. Alligator chilling in the swamp is like, you know what? I read about these damn politicians in Florida. I'm going to go get me one.
Like, I'm just so sick and tired of these people playing games.
Right.
If the people are not going to do nothing about it, we going to stand up and do
something. We going to handle it.
You know it has to be really bad when animals will stand up, but people won't.
People won't, right. Think about that for a second. The gator is going to handle it where the humans won't. I don't even know. Yeah, that is one of the craziest stories that I've ever heard. I mean, I a gator waiting underneath your car, like, yeah. I'm gonna show.
Yeah, I heard about what you've been doing, bro.
Yeah.
And it ain't right.
Yeah, I'm gonna show you some justice. Anyway.
That karma coming back to bite him in the ass.
Exactly. You know, the gator's like, yeah, I hear that you humans, y'all supposed to have dominion and all that other stuff. I'm going to show you who the real Don is.
Right.
On that note, speaking of the real Don, before we get our guest for the night on, we're going to take a little break here. This is Nas, the Don.
It's the heartbeat of the people. To get the people, I want to get the people who cannot afford to go to big concerts. Some of these people do not even have TV, so they cannot afford cable. Some of them can't afford a radio, so the only thing they can listen to is the music. People from the ghetto, people from the projects, street people, article ghetto youth who know what it is to sing about suffering and reality.
New young girl, never mad over way. New young girl, never mad over way. New young girl, never mad over way. New young girl, never mad over way.
Condominium roof deck, so anyone move next, I hit you with 2 texts. Rock a Roberto Cavalli, no short on convertible, Mazzy, my Colombiana, Mazzy, riding beside me. Every tat means something, that's my word on my body. I have to lean something within my first shotty. My niggas is ignorant, put that in your pigment. Just cause y'all was mad at all the years I was getting it. And 976, 98 the Bentley, now it's a ghost phantom. And y'all can't stand them, but...
Rapture. death trying to stay alive, but they be out robbing. I've been out rhyming since born out, it's like Prophet Muhammad said, eat from a scholar, worth more than the blood of a martyr. So I'ma keep it on till I see $1 billion. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Love model toaster, mommy popping like she poster. Eyes straight shot like I'm never sober. Big time smoker, Indonesia notes ya. Many of these you get hold up before you end up with up from my soldier. Conscious, under fire I remain on some conscience. It's for every ghetto in the hood. Namadon, super cat, the Don Dada, understood.
Together you got smooth drummer.
Hi, welcome back to Smooth Drama with Big Hugger and Miss 100%. That was not the Don. All right, bear with us while we get tonight's guest, B. Severe, co-owner of Severe Society Films, on the line.
Yeah, that song made me want. I was like, I'm ready to dance. I'm ready to go to the club.
I wanted to dance off of that little. Okay. Yeah.
Ready to go to the club. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, let's get it popping up in here. Oh, nah, it's got me fired up now. Let's get it going. I have to find my dancing shoes. If I got like 500 pairs of dust on them.
You're so silly.
I'm just saying, you know, if you hear a nice song, get fired up. It's like the beat was pumping. You know, I'm like, imagine I'm in the club. It's like 500 girls dancing.
There you go.
I'm saying, hey, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that'll be fun. 500 guys butt naked shaking it in front of me. Oh, sorry. My bad.
I ain't hating on you. I won't be there. And be like, what? Is 500 naked dudes in this club dancing? I'm good.
I don't feel like it.
Yeah. It'd be like, yeah.
Hello.
I lost my invitation to this party.
You did?
Yes. Hey, how you doing? Welcome to Smooth Drama.
Thank you. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. What have you guys been talking about?
Oh, well, you know, we were just coming back from the break, and, you know, we was fired up by the song and dancing. But I want to ask you, as far as being fired up in what you do, how is pain the new pleasure?
Well, it kind of, it's not for everybody. Basically, the theory is that if you get pain, your body releases endorphins. Because it's a way of your system's way of coping with it. So if it's done right, so if it's not that painful, but a little painful, but you get all this endorphin rush, it feels really good. I'm not a sub. I've always been the dominant one, but that's what submissives tell me. That's part of it. I think it's also just being, I think a lot, especially like submissive guys, have really, really stressful jobs and really, really, like, high-powered, stressful lives. So they kind of, when it comes to sex, it's really a big relief for them to just be, like, the passive one and being told what to do and to just be able to relax and kind of get done by somebody who takes control of the whole thing. I think that's really attractive to a lot of people.
All right. And so y'all know we have our guest for the night, Ms. D. Severe, on the line.
And I don't really think this is new. Maybe it's just now people are giving it more attention, but let me see. I'm 30-something years old, and I've kind of been hearing about this since I was little, but it's getting more attention now than before. So what do you think is the reason why?
I think people are, I mean, it's been around for centuries. I mean, the Marquis de Sade was kind of one of the earliest people, and he was in, what, like the 16th or 17th century? Someone correct me on that one. Maybe he was like around the French Revolution times.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I think now it's sort of gotten more acceptable and more mainstream. I think maybe 20 or 30 years ago, it was like a really, really big secret. Like, it was, like, really forbidden. Whereas now, you know, most big cities will have a couple of fetish clubs where you can kind of go meet other kinky people. There's things like FetLife, which is kind of like a you know, Match.com or a Facebook for kinky people. There's Alt.com, which is like a Match.com for kinky people. It's much more out. Like, for instance, Thank You, Rihanna, that S&M song did a lot. You know, it's just become, like, it's just another fun thing to do. It's a way of kind of expanding your horizons and making your sex life kind of more fun and exciting, which I think everybody wants to do.
So how would you describe your fan base, the people that are into your films?
We have a really wide variety of people because we have a really wide variety of material. Like, some of our material, like, we have both female-dominant and male-dominant material, and we have really heavy stuff, and then we have stuff that's kind of funny, and we have stuff that's kind of, like, light and sensual and romantic, and, you know, for instance, we started an instructional series for kind of the more, you know, complicated stuff that you shouldn't try at home without, you know, finding out about it. So I think, you know, there's a different, you know, I think because I'm... My husband and I are in real life a female dom, male submissive couple when we play. I think probably more of our fans are into femdom, but we definitely do a lot of male dom, and we get, you know, fans of that also.
All right. So I know you were talking about when we play. I thought y'all were serious. It looked like y'all are real serious.
I mean, play as in, you know, BDSM play. I mean, we met as a lifestyle kinky couple. We met on alt.com 13 years ago. So, you know, I mean, we have a lot of fun. We have a really, you know, I mean, we have an equal relationship. I mean, my husband is my business partner. So we have a real equal relationship most of the time, but when, like, during sex, I'm definitely the dominant person, and that's kind of how we both like it.
Okay. So how did you get into this? When did you know that, yeah, I wanted to be a dom?
I always kind of had those fantasies, and I always kind of had, you know, like, when I was a little kid, one of the first people that I really thought was super cool was, remember the evil queen in Snow White, Maleficent? Mm-hmm. Like, she lived in, like, a castle, and she wore black, and she was powerful. I just thought she was awesome. So I've always kind of been, like, ever since I could remember, I was kind of attracted to the dark side of things. And definitely kind of once I kind of found out about, you know, kind of got into, you know, having sex and kind of was out on my own, it definitely kind of had fantasies in that direction. I was kind of like always like this, you know, superwoman kind of person. And then when I was like 18 and 19, I was living in New York, and a lot of my gay friends were into it. Like, I knew a lot of leather boys, and that was kind of their thing. So I kind of found out about, oh, this is this whole thing that, you know, people do, and it's kind of in real life, and it was kind of really attractive to me, you know. And then I met some kind of regular, you know, like, professional heterosexual people who were into it too. So it was like, oh, okay, this is like much wider spread than I thought it was.
Well, I had a somewhat experience with this. I had a woman that was talking about, I want you to beat me. And I'm sitting up there thinking the racial aspect. I'm like, I'm not going to be the black man beating on the woman.
Well, you never want to hurt somebody in ways they don't want to be hurt, but I mean, I definitely know some black guys who are doms that have, you know, have submissives of all races, and it works out just fine.
I've always thought it was kind of weird because I never meet people who are just straight up and up as far as the sexual side. I always meet the people that are way, you know, to the other side. They're nothing is normal or quote unquote normal about them. So I thought it was me, like maybe it's my energy that's attracting all these people. And at first I felt very uncomfortable, you know, about it. But as I got older and learned more and, you know, had more of an open mind, I started to see this as more of a normal thing than an abnormal thing. And I think that with a lot of people, they kind of see it as something that's gross, nasty, abnormal, perverted, or something like that. And it's really not.
It's really not. Plus, you know, there's a lot of degrees that people can go to. Like, you can kind of, you know, you can go full on into it and have like a 24/7 lifestyle, or you can just be somebody who has, you know, regular sex, but maybe you like to get spanked or tied up a little bit. And you don't really need to go further than that. You can just kind of do, like, really light, kinky stuff. You know, it just depends on what you're comfortable with and kind of what your partner's comfortable with and, you know, where you're kind of, you know, kind of where your fantasies lead you and, you know, where you want to go with it. You know, I think it's really important for people to kind of talk about what their fantasies are. And there might be some things where, you know, where, like, the fantasy seems like a really awesome thing to do in real life. And there's some fantasies where, like, maybe in real life it would not nearly, it would kind of be, like, scary and weird. It wouldn't really be that good, so it should kind of stay a fantasy.
Right.
You know, but the important thing is to kind of communicate with the person you're with about the stuff.
Yeah. So, I say that all the time. Every fantasy is not meant to be a reality. Something
true.
Just stay
exactly.
So what...
Correct.
What is the severest fantasy slash fetish? What turns you on?
I'd say that my main kind of fetish things is I love leather. I love black leather clothes and black leather coats and gloves and boots and the whole thing. There's just something about leather that kind of really gets me. And I really like, I do like whips. There's something about whips that is just kind of really kind of sexy and elegant and, you know, it requires skill and it's kind of hot. So I think those would be the two main ones. But I like a wide variety of things. One of the things I really kind of enjoy doing in my personal life that my husband really likes too is he really likes sensory deprivation, where it's kind of like he's blindfolded and tied up and I can kind of do, it's like, is it going to be pleasure or is it going to be pain?
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of goes completely into subspace and just relaxes and he gets pleasurable things and painful things done to him. So that's something that's really fun. So I'd say those are kind of my biggies that I really enjoy.
All right. So now focusing on your film career, of all the films you've done, which is your favorite?
I think I probably, the one we just did recently, which was actually kind of a funny parody, we did Strap-On Idol, which was a parody of American Idol. And kind of the idea is, the way it came about was, Strap-On plays like a really popular category for us as a film company, so we shoot a lot of it. And we tend to kind of use the same guys over and over again. And we were talking like, you know, we really need to get some new guys. Like, we need some new faces in here. And we're thinking like, well, you should have auditions. And then we kind of thought about that. And it's like, wait a minute. This whole parody movie thing is really big. We could do something with this. So we did. We had three judges. We had me, Zoe Holloway, and Cinnamon Love. So we kind of looked like the original American Idol judges, except we were all women. And we did like an audition thing for Strap-On Talent. It was really funny. It got nominated for an Avian Best Strap-On Release Award, and it was just really fun to do. So it was, you know, that's probably my favorite to date. But like I love making movies. My Jimmy and I came over from mainstream film into this, like originally kind of like regular filmmakers. So like I love the making movie part of it. That's like my, you know, like that's kind of like my favorite thing. So
So,
I always have a favorite, but that's my current favorite.
All right. Now, I read about one of your films and your thoughts about it, the Forensic Mysteries.
That's actually not an adult movie. That was a short film we did. So
yeah,
a completely different category.
Right, I know, but you know, it talked about your feelings about these so-called true crime shows and how they're always doing these dramatic takes about people. Talk about that. I thought it was interesting.
It was actually from the film. It was kind of like, it was also kind of like a take on, you know, like all those forensic shows, except in my movie, the dead girl wakes up and kind of does comment, like really sarcastic teenage commentary on everything that's going on. So it was kind of like funny and tragic because she's dead, and she kind of like talked about how, you know, like the various circumstances that led her, you know, to getting to this point, but she kind of has like this really sarcastic take on everything kind of that happened to her, and she's kind of like thinking back on her life, and that's what Forensic Mysteries was. It was kind of a comedy drama or comedy tragedy, which is kind of one of the things I like. I like things that have like a light side and a dark side.
Right.
Very interesting. I wanted to ask you about the tickling fetish. Being a person who is very ticklish, I find it to be torture when a person even acts like they're going to tickle me. So I'm kind of curious how, you know, about how a person gets the pleasure out of being tortured. That, now, I can see the spanking and even choking and all that stuff, but when it comes to tickling, it's really scary to me, and I don't know why, but...
You know, a lot of people feel that way. I think the tickling fans like it because it's a way, I think the person who's getting, especially if it's like tickle torture, you're tied up and you can't get away from being tickled. I think the fans like kind of the out of control helplessness of it, but it's really kind of like happy and light and not violent. So it's kind of like people who are kind of like find like a lot of BDSM to be kind of like scary and too much, like having someone tied up and be tickled. It seems like, hey, it's really light and lighthearted and funny, but it's still the same effect of somebody kind of being tickled and something is being done to them that they're helpless to resist.
Right.
It's really, we started shooting it like about 4 or 5 years ago. Like Howard Stern kept talking about tickle torture, so it was this giant fad. So we've had a Clips for Sale store about it since then. But there's kind of a core group of people who just really love it. We have a lot of like really regular fans in that department.
Wow.
So when you tell people what you do, you find that you get generally more accepted now as opposed to maybe when you first started and got into it?
I would say so. I mean, the vast majority of my friends are either in fetish or in the adult industry. So, you know, in my circle of friends, we're all really accepted. I think people, like, that's really, like, fetish and porn is really a community. Like, people are really kind of united with each other. Other people, like, when we first started doing this, a lot of people we knew in non-adult film weren't very accepting of it. Like, they were, like a number of people kind of dropped us as friends, and that was kind of creepy. My mother-in-law was really cool. Like, we finally kind of told her, like, okay, well, you know, we've been shooting stuff, and the recession's been here, and we really need money, so we've been shooting porn. And she kind of went, well, you know, there's a lot of money in adult. There's nothing to be, you know, it's nothing to sneeze at. So it was like, yay.
Mother-in-law in the world.
my mother-in-law is, like, awesome. Like, I really lucked out on her. So, like, she's been cool, so that was, like, a really, like, that was, like, an important, you know, person to be, like, really cool about it. So for the most part, like, some people are kind of still friends with us, but they really don't know want to know the details of what we do, and some people are still friends with us and kind of do what they're kind of curious about, you know, kind of what's the whole thing, and they kind of, like, want to come and, you know, hey, you're shooting in a dungeon, can we come and look at it, you know, but... You know,
yeah, I would want to know about the atmosphere. I mean, like when you're shooting, what's the atmosphere? Is like do you have like all the actors there, or is it like long, tedious? I mean, I've never, you know, I've heard that filming films is long and tedious, and that it could be tiring and somewhat boring.
I mean, it is somewhat, usually shooting this kind of stuff is kind of more like shooting reality TV, because it's somewhat scripted, but it's not like to the letter scripted, because like a lot of like adult performers and fetish performers have had acting classes, but some haven't. So if you give them a lot of lines to memorize, they're not going to come out natural. So it's more like you give them a script outline of kind of this is what's going to happen and this is kind of where you need to end up, but then you let them improvise.
Okay.
Also, with things like spanking or whipping, it's kind of like you only have one take because people get marked. So you can't go back because, like, you can't go back to the beginning of the spanking when someone's butt is already red.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, once you start, which is one of the reasons why we shoot with two or three cameras, so we make sure that we have, you know, like a lot of usable angles. Because, like, once you start going, you kind of got to go, you know, except for, you know, like, obviously, like, we have a safe word for people. Like, if somebody's, like, you know, if somebody's, like, tied up and they feel like their hand's getting numb, then they need to stop. And that,
right,
for that kind of thing, obviously, you need to stop. But other than that, we kind of try to kind of keep momentum going and try to get people to kind of get in the head and kind of get in the groove and go. And that just works, you know, that just works out a lot better than trying to kind of like try to do it like as you would like a mainstream film. But I mean, it is tiring. I really love what I do. I think it's really, really fun. You know, you do get really tired at the end of the day, but it's like a good kind of tired. Like you did a really cool thing and you accomplished stuff you wanted to accomplish, and then it's like, oh, okay, I'm tired now.
All right, so tell us what you got coming up, and tell people where they can catch you at if they wanted to see what you got going.
Well, the main place they can go is www.severesocietyfilms.com, which has links to all of our stuff. Like if you want to buy a DVD, if you want to buy a clip, etc. One of the things we're doing starting next month is we're coming out with a newsletter where we're going to have, like, we're going to send people some free clips, and we're going to have like a schedule of kind of like these are the clips that are going up in our various stores, and you know, if we go out and like, go to an event or something, we'll take some photos and we'll blog about stuff. So it's free and it's kind of a cool thing. So people should sign up. Our next couple of things, we just shot actually a male dom movie called The Devil's Workshop with Tim Woodman, who's a really cool male dom who directed for us. And we just shot that with Amber Rain and Kiki Dare. It turned out really awesome, and I'm editing it now. So that's probably going to be one of our next things. And last year we moved to a 4,500 square foot studio in downtown LA, which we're still kind of working on. It needed a lot of renovation, so you know that's kind of coming up. But basically, if people go to www.severesocietyfilms.com, you know, all the info you need about us is there.
Okay.
All
right. Well, we want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. This was super fun. Anytime.
All right. Well, we take you up on that when I'm in LA. And
okay.
No, I'm lying. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on the show. And we definitely will look to have you come back on because we enjoyed it also.
Well, that's awesome. I enjoyed you guys. You have a good one.
All right. You have a good one, too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That was Ms. D. Severe of Severe Society Films.
Very lively, very entertaining.
Yes.
Love her energy.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're going to be down with their films or whatnot, you got to be ready.
Yeah.
Because they bring in the noise.
You can't come half stepping.
Yeah. You said come. Anyway. We're going to go on break. We're going to slow it down a little bit. This is Odyssey. Slow it down. Yeah.
but I'm a deep bastard. Always down to where the beat.
And Miss 100%. That was Odyssey. Slow it down.
Yeah, that was. I was like, I'm feeling right now. All right, here we go. Nothing like underground hip hop to get you going. Speaking of getting me going, you know, of course, I'm hooded out in response to what's been going on across the nation, showing our support. But talking about uniforms, I got to start down in South America, Brazil. They got the schools have microchip T-shirts because they want to stop truancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, the chips are placed underneath the badge of a school uniform or on the sleeve, and I guess this is 20,000 pupils in the northeastern city of, if I say it wrong, whatever, Vitoria da Conquista.
Wow.
Yep. Chips embedded into their school T-shirts.
Well, you know what's funny? It they're saying Brazil, but this is not the first time that I've heard about microchips in the school uniforms. They actually had done it here in America or maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was a big deal, but nobody really paid attention to it. And it's funny to me how when it's happening here, it's a big deal, but nobody is really doing anything about it. But when it's happening somewhere else, everybody wants to jump on a bandwagon. It's like, why can't you just take care of home first and being worried about everywhere else?
Hold on. So you're trying to say that they would have microchips here in the clothes in the United States and we wouldn't care about it? We only care if it's microchips somewhere else?
Yeah, because we always want to be seen as the country that cares about everybody else. We care about everybody else, but we don't care about our own.
Well, I don't think it's caring about everybody else. I mean,
but remember, I said we want to appear that way.
Right? Because I'm thinking it's like the pimp and the hoe.
Yeah.
Pimp. Yeah, he looked like he cared in his shiny suit. Anyway. Yeah, I just thought that it was funny. And I guess the authorities say that the T-shirts can be washed and ironed without damaging the chips.
But what I'm trying to figure out is how the hell it's going to work, because if you want to skip school, all you have to do is take the fucking jacket off. It's not like it's glued to their body.
Well, I guess they're saying that if the shirt is not at school, they're coming to get you.
They could take the shirt off at school, leave it at school, and leave school.
Yeah, but I'm thinking that they're going to track the movements of the shirt. If the shirt stays in one place for 5 straight hours, they're going to assume that nobody's in it.
Yeah, but you know what? Talk about a waste of money. You're going to pay people to sit somewhere and track all of these microchips on these kids' shirts. Think about how big of a waste that is.
What are you talking about? They've been doing that anyway.
They're going to skip regardless. I don't give a damn. You know what? What's funny about kids is we don't give them enough credit. Kids are smart as hell. Regardless of what a child wants to do or how many rules you put in place to stop them from doing it, they're going to find a way to do it if they really want to do it.
Yeah, that is true.
So it's a waste.
Yeah, I just think that the implications of your clothing, you know how everybody, you know, the whole mark of the beast, and
right.
Don't accept the chip.
Right.
Nah, just go to Macy's and buy it, unknowingly.
Wow.
I mean, because that's what we're looking at here. You know, people who are thinking, yeah, I'm not going to accept the chip, but you wearing the polo shirt.
Right, and it's in there.
Yeah, because I'm going to make an assumption. I could be wrong, but I'm going to make the assumption anyway that it's not just in Brazil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an assumption, but yeah, you're not assuming that. It's the truth.
Now, I've got another assumption, 100.
Okay.
I'm assuming since Florida has the stand your ground law,
uh-huh,
I make the assumption that if I saw George Zimmerman, I'm going to assume that my life is in danger,
mm-hmm,
and I should act or react with extreme prejudice. What you think?
I think that would be appropriate, that anybody sees this man, they should just go ahead and end him. Because he's going to do something to you. I mean, he's somebody that likes to kill people. So you might as well go ahead and assume that your life is in danger if you come across him.
Right. Yeah, you don't have to do anything to him. He's going to attack you.
Right.
Now, you know what? Maybe we just need him to drive his car over to that church that the other politician was hanging out at. And let that data go ahead on and get a piece of Mr. Zimmerman here.
Have himself some dessert. He's already had dinner with the politician, and let him eat Zimmerman for dessert.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to me. You know, we talk about, I mean, if you're going to have a law that says stand your ground, and if you feel like someone's going to harass you or put your life in danger, you shoot. I mean, as anyone who likes wears a hoodie, like I'm wearing now, my life is forfeit around him, so I must attack.
Yeah. But, you know, I know we're making just a little light out of it, but in actuality, we're not. We're just trying to draw some comparisons here. And the thing that disgusts me more than anything is the fact that they're now trying to make this young man's past part of, you know, an excuse for this man killing this young boy. And they found an empty weed bag on him 3 years ago. He painted some graffiti on a wall a couple years ago. He got into a fight a couple years ago. But what the hell does that have to do with the man following him, chasing him, getting out of his car, starting to fight with him? Then when the boy tries to defend himself, he shoots him and kills him. What does that have to do with that? It's disgusting. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I've said what I had to say. If you see him, he's obviously a threat to you.
Right.
That, I mean, there's no mistake. I mean, and I don't say it lightly. I honestly feel like he's a threat. Under Florida law, I would have the right to defend myself. Mm-hmm. And I really do wish that an alligator would get underneath his car and try to catch him. I didn't laugh.
I'm not smiling.
I'm neither. Yeah, we're real serious. So, if you're listening to Mr. Alligator, or since it is Florida and they do have an inundation of pythons, if one of y'all want to jump out the bush and constrict, we would not be against that. Yeah.
I don't know if you or anybody else had heard about the police officer who just been fired because he posted on Trayvon's Facebook page with something like "Live like a thug, die like a thug," or something like that. It amazes me still, and I don't know why, how people can still think that a black person's life is, you know, you're defendable because you're black.
Oh, well, let's talk about this weekend. This weekend, there's the film The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games made $155 million at the box office, making it the third best debut in North American box office history.
Right.
Unfortunately, one of the main characters in The Hunger Games was a little girl named Rue. Well, in the book, it says that she has black hair and olive skin. We've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So, black hair, olive skin. Olive skin being, you know, my color, your color.
Mm-hmm.
There was an outrage on Twitter where a whole bunch of people were upset that it was a black girl. The main character that they had, apparently in the book and in the movie, the character dies. It's a sad character. It's a sad scene, whatnot. And people were upset, shocked. They were tweeting, "We're shocked or confused and angry and just mad because, hey, it ruined the movie." Because the girl that they were supposed to like was black. You know, one person even tweeted, "This girl wanted to know why they made all the good characters black." Now, when we put this into context and we compare this with the Trayvon Martin shooting, I mean, you make a context. This is a fictional piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks are upset because the good character that dies, that's supposed to be what we all look to, future, whatever, they're mad about that.
Right.
Why are people mad that black character is a good person?
I'll say it like this. You have to understand, and I think this is the problem with African-American people, black people, whatever you want to call us. We don't see how much power we actually have. Because of slave mentality, we still wear it, we still own it. We don't understand how powerful we are. Anytime people can be upset just because something good happens to a black person, you have to know that that's jealousy beyond any jealousy that you've ever known before. That's the way that I see it. Why do they hate us so much? We didn't ask to be here. We were brought here. But now that we're here, we have the same rights as other people have, even though, you know, sometimes it doesn't appear that way. We're making all sorts of headlines for ourselves as judges and everything else. And people are just so upset, like black people don't deserve to do anything but be treated as animals.
Well,
and it's all jealousy. Like, I don't have to be forced to just the color of our skin.
Yeah, I'm focused on the image part, you know, because the fact that people, and we're talking about young people, can have such a negative reaction to a black character being a good character or a main character. I find that you have a society that shapes people's wills to make them hate you or dislike you, or they can't conceive of good coming from you. See, it's a societal image issue. You know, you could say he's racist. Is that too? But the fact that just on the whole, people just can't see it. I mean, we're talking about real life, and then we're talking also fiction.
Right.
This is science fiction. Mm-hmm. This is not even real shit. And these people, they're going crazy.
In any avenue, whatever, we're hated. Just because of the color of our skin, I think it's a lot deeper than just the color of our skin.
I got a solution. Maybe we need to just send them over to D. Sevier's studio.
To
get some punishment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Y'all need some strap-on punishment. On that note, I want to thank Ms. D. Sevier of Sevier Film Society, Sevier Society Film, for coming on the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. And for Miss 100%, I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. After N-Word, with Smooth Drama, and we out.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth.
Drama.